listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY.
Musician.
Musician podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 193 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
I'm mostly good, a little confused.
That's right. You had an interesting tidbit about some shows you played over the weekend that were sort of confusing. I thought we should have you share it on the podcast because some of our listeners may have some advice or have experienced the same thing. So go forth.
Yeah, and I have a theory. I have several theories about what caused this confounding thing. But anyway, so lately I've been playing two very different kinds of shows. One is, you know, like a listening room where I'm playing usually all my own material and it's, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and a half long. And then I've been playing this, you know, other kind of typical cover band barroom gig type thing, which is, you know, reliable money. Anyways, I put together a set of 3 hours of tunes for a show I did on Saturday, and it was like tons of energy from the audience. 3 hours of cover songs, if I didn't make that clear. Anyways, tons of energy in the room. Everyone was into it, singing along, dancing, clapping. Like afterwards, people were coming up and being so complimentary, and then my wife was there, and she came up and she said, "It was so cool to hear you play like so many just super catchy, poppy, upbeat, dancey songs." So, two nights later,
and wait, at first, didn't you say you felt like you were the king of the world?
Yes, I did. I felt like the king of the world. I should say that. I was like executing all these songs really well, and just like I'm so good. Anyways, so two nights later, I have a similar kind of gig, cover music, barroom kind of gig. I played the exact same set list, the exact songs in the exact same order, and it felt like dead, like crickets in the room. And afterwards, I had a friend who was there. I was like, "Well, you win some, you lose some, but what the hell do you think happened?" And he said, "Well, you know, I just don't think these people wanted to hear a whole bunch of just really depressing songs." And I'm like, "What the hell? Like this is the exact same 3 hour chunk of songs in the same order that made my wife say like so catchy, upbeat, poppy, dancey, it was so great." And like and there you go. This is what's confounding me. In one setting, I had people like feeling joy, and in another setting, the opposite. So
you said you had a couple theories on what caused this.
Yeah, okay, so Saturday night's gig was a small room that was packed. I don't know if that creates an energy in the audience or if it does something to the actual sound of, you know, the speakers. Things are more reverberant and so things feel more energetic. Monday night was a large room that may have had a similar amount of people, but because it was so large, felt kind of empty. That was one thing. Number two was on Saturday, I was the main act. You know, there was nothing after me. And although I played the exact same hours from 7 to 10 at this other venue, I was kind of the warm-up to karaoke, which started at 10 after me. So those people might have just been waiting around to sing their Johnny Cash song or their Journey song. And, you know, I was this annoying hurdle or something they had to listen to. But so I understand that in terms of an audience's like enthusiasm about the songs, but I don't understand how the time and place affected their perception of like the quality of the songs. Like how could the same exact set be dancey and upbeat in one setting and then depressing in another? I don't get that.
That's very odd. So it sounds like you need therapy again. So last time we got some good responses from the listeners to help you through your troubles. So maybe that's where we need to go. If you have some advice for Chris, or if you've had a similar experience, you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com or leave some comments in the show notes at cdbabypodcast.com. I think it is interesting because it's like you get a set dialed in and, you know, like we're going to be talking about the DIY Musician Conference coming up later in the show. but you know, where Tom Jackson does a live band makeover and you kind of get a set dialed, and it's like, okay, so once you get a set dialed, it seems like if it works, it should work. What other signals are there that you need to be adjusting and adjusting to in order to take some cues from what the audience might be feeling?
Yeah, well, and then, you know, that thing happens when people are responding in a positive way. It feeds your ability to execute in a way. Like,
yeah,
there's just less barriers to delivering it well. So like Saturday, like all my looping stuff, everything was just on. Like all my vocals that I was looping were super in tune. And then when you're kind of putting it out there and feeling like there's no response, like you get a little insecure or whatever. And then I feel like I just wasn't as good on Monday too, but partially in response to the kind of the energy that wasn't there.
Yeah.
Cause I started like giving it my all and with confidence, but anyways, mysteries.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, we've got, we're going to rework the show a little bit today. We've got a DIY Musician Conference 2017 preview coming up later. And I know that a lot of people listening to the podcast aren't necessarily going to Nashville to the conference. So we're going to move the preview to the end of the show and bump up the news and listener questions. We got a lot of listener questions and feedback. And before we do all of that, I think it's important that we have a quick heart-to-heart with the audience. Wouldn't you say, Chris? We've had a couple experiences recently, and it's time for a heart-to-heart. How should we break this?
Is this going to be a game of bad cop, bad cop?
Yeah, I think so. We talk about extensively on this podcast about how to move your career forward, how to take things to the next level, and how, especially how to interact with others in the music community, especially professionals working in various jobs in the music business, and how important it is to follow directions and to be very clear with what, you know, the information you provide. So both Chris and myself recently had open submissions for something pertaining to the conference and found it still shocking how hard it was for people to follow directions and give the proper information.
Simple directions. On the thing I was asking for, I needed 3 bits of information. Like, just 3.
Tell them what you were trying to do.
So I'm trying to put together a playlist of music for conference attendees to submit their songs. We make a playlist that will play in between the seminars and such on the speakers at the conference. So I just want to hear the songs and put together this playlist. So I said, I need your artist name, the name of the song, and then a link to it on Spotify, because it's going to be a Spotify playlist. And so, you know, plenty of people followed the directions fine. Many, however, were sending Reverb Nation links and YouTube links. I was like, what? And there's hundreds of, you know, at least more than 100 submissions to go through. So it's like, I'm not going to go doing any extra searching.
Yes, and the thing that I found, I was working on 2 things. One, we were doing this YouTube pop-up studio and had people submit. There was people that submitted YouTube channels to be featured by YouTube that had 1 video and it was them talking to it. Or more confusing, someone who didn't even do music submitting to have YouTube film them doing I don't know what. But that was one of them. But the bigger one, the bigger head scratcher was we're having this recording session at a recording studio at Ocean Way Studios in Nashville. And I asked for open submissions for someone to be the band that they're going to demonstrate how to mic drums, how to mic guitars and vocals. And it'd be this whole thing where you'd be the demo band and ideally maybe get a track or two when it's all said and done that you can keep. I had someone submit saying that they did pre-made music and it was on WAV files. And I was like, how is this supposed to, how does that help me? That just made my job harder because now I have to sift through stuff that is irrelevant. And now it makes me go, I don't want to hear anything by you. And I apologize if this sounds harsh and some of the people that did this might actually listen to this podcast. That's exactly what you don't want. If there's an opportunity and the instructions or the directions, you can't follow them, or you see something and it's like, I was asking for a 5-piece band. So a duo that makes music on computers is not going to work for a session that needs to demonstrate miking techniques. Don't clutter up someone's inbox by submitting because you just want to feel like you've had the chance at that opportunity. You're not going to get picked anyway. So it's one of those things that's just boggles my mind that people do over and over again. And it just makes someone on the other end who has a job to do very frustrated. So that was a little heart to heart we needed to have.
Yeah. And I think it's also probably important to remember. So if you're submitting a song for this Spotify playlist, putting together a Spotify playlist is not my job. It's this extra thing I have to do for our conference. I have this, you know, we have jobs. And then like, so if you're making me do a bunch of searching for this kind of, you know, important for the conference, but ultimately not my top priority for my workload of the day. Like, no way.
Yeah.
Like, we got stuff to do.
We don't bring that forth to complain, but to educate. Because
I do. I bring it forth for both.
Yes. So let's move on. We're going to get to some news and then listener feedback and then the conference preview. But, one last item. Right now, CD Baby, worldwide distribution is just $29. Use the coupon code GETMORE or save $20 off a pro submission, which will also make sure you're collecting all your mechanical royalties and all your publishing money as well. You can save $20 off a pro submission with GETMORE Pro. That's for a limited time. We don't know how long that's going to be running. It's a crazy great deal. You also get free access to show.co, which has a amazing feature that's about to launch that the major labels have been clamoring for. So all that comes free with your submission. So great marketing tools, making the most money from your music from all the sources possible. So I just want to make sure that you knew that was going on. So with that said, let's get to the news.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
Music.
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 News.
10 minutes of silence is a big hit on iTunes. A 10-minute silent song is in the top 30 on iTunes. Not just a gimmick, the 99-cent track solves a very common annoyance that anyone that has ever used Apple's iTunes in their car has experienced every time they plug in to hear music. Samir Mezrahi has released a 9-minute, 58-second long track of uninterrupted silence, and it is quickly climbing the iTunes charts. Far from just a gimmick, the track has a purpose. A very good song, it's like got 5 A's and then very good song, is designed to solve a problem experienced by anyone who's plugged their phone into their car and fired up iTunes. Blaring from the speakers comes the first song alphabetically stored in the app. Purchase a very good song, and the first song becomes silence, giving you time to pick what you want to hear. Both the media and general public love it. And it's funny because I have some tweets here. A hero and genius amongst us all. Please consider linking up with Elon. That was from a Twitter user. And another Twitter user wrote, not all heroes wear capes. And then it was even featured on GQ.com because this is such a problem. It's funny because it's been a long time since I've been using iTunes in my car, but I remember that being an issue from a long time ago, and you'd think they'd fix that by now. But anyway, a musician has solved it with 10 minutes of silence, and it is actually charting on iTunes right now. SoundCloud is saved for now. SoundCloud has agreed to take on $169.5 million in funding from global merchant bank The Rain Group and Singapore-headquartered investment company Temasek. As previously reported, the deal is understood to jointly deliver the two parties as majority stake in the company. Their first act is changing of guards. Veteran digital media exec Kerry Trainer has been named SoundCloud's new CEO, with Michael Weissman joining the company as chief operating officer. Outgoing CEO and SoundCloud co-founder Alexander Lunge takes up the position of chairman of the company's board. His fellow co-founder, Eric Walforce, is named chief product officer. Trainer has 20 years of experience working with music and video streaming products, most recently as chief executive officer of Vimeo, where he led the video platform through its largest expansion in usage, revenue, and shareholder value. Michael Weissman worked closely with Trainer at Vimeo. SoundCloud is not out of the woods yet. There's a lot of work and positive momentum needed to turn the ship around. The CEO pick seems like a smart choice on paper, but with the new majority stakeholders, will they have the best interest of the music community in mind? That remains to be seen. Looking for that hot new album promotion idea? Well, Arcade Fire has released a version of their new album, Everything Now, on a fidget spinner. They posted online that there were a limited number of fidget spinners available for $109, and apparently they sold out instantly. No word on how many were actually available, and quite honestly, it wasn't 100% sure if the fidget spinners were real or just a prank. One thing is definitely true, there were plenty of fans expressing dissatisfaction when they were unable to buy the sold-out fidget spinner. So if it was a joke, the Arcade Fire might want to actually fire up spinner production. And that's all the news.
It probably was both real and a joke.
Well, they've been doing a lot of pranks lately online, and some that have fallen flat. And this one, if it is real, because this was like a week ago when they launched this, if it was real, no one has received one yet. Because I did not see anyone posting right. photos online of their Arcade Fire fidget spinner.
Yeah. Well, I guess I don't mean joke, but commentary, some sort of social commentary mixed with this actual product.
I see.
A joke at the expense of their fans who purchased them.
Well, yeah, that's what I didn't know. Like, it's so ridiculous. If they sold out, you know, good for them. They need to get more working. If not, I mean, it was funny how many people online were just like angry that they couldn't get one. So, you know, maybe the next hot promotion item for your music is a fidget spinner. But by the time you get them made, that trend will be long gone, and Goodwill will be overflowing with fidget spinners. So anyway, that was very, very interesting. SoundCloud is living another day. It's a little concerning that these people gave up a majority stake in order to take the money. A lot of them, you know, major labels have a stake in SoundCloud, but now anyone who's invested before apparently is in a second class citizen compared to these new investors. They get their money first. That's what I read online. So hopefully they have musicians and the music community's best interest in mind, and they keep working towards that independent utopia they keep claiming that they're working towards.
Well, if they don't, things will sort themselves out in not a favorable way.
And I thought 10 minute of silence article was funny in light of our recent conversation about streaming and streaming myths debunked, which are a couple items in the comment section coming up. So unless you have any other comments about the 10 minutes of silence or other news items, we can move along.
Well, what I was wondering is if the estate of John Cage can sue him for, you know, copyright infringement.
Yeah, how do we know who recorded the first silent song and who really is owed credit for it? Yeah, it's funny. But, you know, the one thing that it does highlight that I will say is that you have to look at these digital platforms differently. Now, I wouldn't say that this is a legitimate opportunity for a musician. This is someone who just gamed the system. It might have been some guy that wasn't even a musician. He just got irritated. And so he figured out how he could distribute a song to iTunes and fix the problem. But these platforms are different, and the way people are using music is different than the mindset we've had so ingrained to us when we thought of music as, I go to the store, I pick out an album, I listen to that album until I save up for money to go buy another album and add to my collection and have this growing collection. Music gets used in different ways, and I guess that'll lead us into our listener feedback. Because one thing is interesting, when you do a show about something like Streaming Myths Debunked, which we did, we didn't say why streaming was the only thing you should ever do, or why streaming was more popular than Jesus, like the Beatles said. They didn't say streaming, but apparently that's how some people took what we said. And in order to debunk some myths, you have to focus on an area. That doesn't mean to the exclusion of everything else. So that must be reiterated. So with that being said, I will get to some of the... We'll start with the feedback from that episode.
Yeah, I'm excited to hear it now.
This first one from Julius Coxwain. This is from the comment section on the podcast blog at cdbabypodcast.com. So if you want to see these and weigh in, you are more than welcome to. But Julius says, how much did Spotify pay you all to deny the impact fake artist music are having on legit independent artists? Really disappointing analysis on this episode. You want to hear what my response was? I did respond.
I do, yeah.
I said, can you show me the fake artists that are having a measurable impact on real artists with the data that goes along with it? It's a sensationalized news item used to make excuses. What is a real artist compared to a fake artist? We work with 650,000 artists at CD Baby, and I've never heard anyone say that a key blocker in their career is fake artist on Spotify. It wouldn't even make the list. That was my response. But, you know, it's interesting that how we can create a sensational headline and people just grab onto it with all their life and make that the source of all their problems. And then on the opposite side, Rob GB is his handle. He said, let me understand something here. What is a fake artist? If someone is making music and posting it under a band name or a pseudonym, how does that make them fake? The music is real, isn't it? I remember decades ago, there was a composer-producer who had 3 hit songs in 3 different genres under 3 different names, all charting around the same time. Did that make him fake? And he said he wished he could remember his name, but he can't. I really don't quite understand what the problem is here. I agree.
Well, neither did we.
Really, what the issue was that the media was, you know, the media is always trying to look for a reason to take jabs at Spotify, because they know that those articles will get shared a lot. So the real issue was, were they flooding legitimate playlists with music basically that they ordered up, as opposed to letting the market decide what should be on those playlists? But, you know, they're Spotify's own playlists. They can put on them what they want on them. It's not like there's some sort of law that says they have to fill it with artists that fit X, Y, and Z, or truly independent artist out touring or on a label. Otherwise, this is unacceptable. So so those were the comments about our Spotify episode. Actually, there was one more on Twitter. Let me pull it up. Robert Christopher, he said, it was over a couple tweets. He said, streaming myths debunked cast. You brought up some valid points in the nuanced scenario you presented, but some of it was, and he said, disingenuous is too strong a word, not exactly the whole picture of forecasting what could happen to streaming. You could do several casts on this topic, but maybe with a non-CD Baby guest point of view thrown into the mix for balance. I had some comments about that. I asked him what he meant by disingenuous, because I didn't understand what specifically he was pointing to that he thought was borderline disingenuous.
The other thing I think of is that we're in a position, I feel like we're in a unique position to comment on this, because we have such a huge catalog and we see the results of what people are doing, and that they are making money and that they're building careers when they're open to the opportunities afforded by the new technology and stuff. So like, I don't get why we're disqualified from having an opinion simply because we send music to Spotify on behalf of artists.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was my take on it. I feel like, actually, I think our opinions, and when I say our opinions, I'm not talking about you and me personally, but as a company, our opinions on it probably represent more of the reality of the situation. You talk to artists one by one, and they're all going to have a different story. But what we've seen here at CD Baby is streaming take off like a rocket. It's now 53% of digital revenues for artists, our catalog. And some of those artists are making tons and tons of money. And so from our perspective, as far as the show's concerned, I want to make sure artists aren't buying into false headlines and false stories that are sensationalized that help get people to websites to click on ads, because that's what a lot of the storylines have been. Or someone who's got an axe to grind that signed a bad record deal and now they're pissed because the realities of their bad record deal are come to light, and they're going to blame it on streaming. For us, we see all these independent artists, and that side of the business is exploding. We want to make sure artists are participating,
and not just participating, but that they're making money. Like, because we have a bone in that fight for sure.
Yeah, I mean, if it would be one thing if we were talking about a format that was in decline and was praising it as if it was the future, then that would be disingenuous. If it was like, yeah, that really benefits you guys to get artists to buy into that. This benefits artists for them to actually understand what's happening and to make sure that they're not missing the boat. The other thing is that I thought was interesting. A lot of times people say, well, yeah, you distribute to these places, so you have a financial interest. With CD Baby, I think one of the beauties of our model where we do take 9% is because we have a vested interest in making sure that the music performs well. And if your music is performing well, we actually do reap some benefits. So why would we encourage artists to do something that's not going to benefit them? You know that our interests are probably more in line with what's going to benefit you because it also benefits us.
Right. Unlike, well, and not that we need to get into this, but unlike some other distributors out there who actually benefit the more you don't sell, because then they don't have to manage anything.
Exactly. Yeah. It's work for us when you sell, but we want artists to benefit, and we have aligned interest with the artist, where other services out there actually don't have aligned interest with the artist. They'd rather you just pay an annual fee or a monthly fee and never show up, because that's how those models work. It's like the health club model. All these health clubs, they don't want people showing up and working out. They just want you paying your monthly fee because it's more work for them if you do.
that's a great comparison.
So anyway, that's why I feel like our viewpoint is valid and should be listened to, because we can see a lot of trends that one by one, story artist by artist, we can't. Now, yes, there are so many different individual success stories of people finding success other ways, totally valid. And that point of that podcast was not to say that streaming is the only thing you should be vested in. It's the one thing that we were talking about for Myths Debunked. So there you have it.
Yeah, I just have one other thing to say about that. I don't want to dismiss the type of complaint that comes from someone who may have been an independent artist making CDs between, you know, say the late 90s and the whatever late 2000 aughts or whatever, who did you know, do well selling physical product to fans at shows or whatever, and like now they're really feeling like that's kind of dried up and this other thing isn't compensating for it. Like, I know that's a real struggle, a real adjustment, but there's always adjustments in the music industry. Every 5 to 10 years is some new paradigm that, you know, the sort of savvy or the younger who just take it for granted can exploit to their advantage, and other people have to change, or, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm not trying to discount the struggle.
Yeah.
It's just, it's untrue that there are no opportunities that will reward you and actually pay you a good living if you do it well.
And that may be where the comment about possibly borderline disingenuous, that is absolutely true. But the one thing we highlighted in that podcast is this is one thing where the artists don't get to decide. It's one of those things that we just have to accept. We don't get to decide how people, first and foremost, at this point, technology companies are deciding that for us. Then them getting major label catalogs on board. And they've done that with streaming, and that's where everything's going. So yeah, correct. I don't want to discount the fact that, yeah, there was people that made truckloads of money selling CDs. We still have artists that still do. It's definitely in decline. I would not sugarcoat that at all. And there is this transitional period. But the thing with streaming is that we don't get to decide if that's going to be the way people consume music. It's already been decided for the foreseeable future that that's going to be the way the majority of people consume music. And so paying attention to it and understanding how it works and going in with a level head is important. I'm sure we'll get some more comments around that. Happy to have them. The comment section is open at the podcast website, and the phone is available. You can email us, and we'll be glad to share. So we'll move on to some other emails. We got quite a few emails. No phone calls for the last couple of weeks, but we've been getting tons of emails. And so I picked out a few. This one was a long email. I'm going to try and paraphrase. It's by, his name's Adam. Basically, he's not been a performing artist or pursuing an artistic career, but he's somebody who could sing. For his anniversary, he did something for his wife and recorded himself, went to a studio and got a recording of him singing two of her favorite songs. During the session, the recording engineer was like, wow, you've got a great voice, a natural talent. And so that's where we're going to jump in on his email. After my session, the studio owner asked me if I was a professional singer, and I told him no. He called me a natural and said he liked the sound and twang of my voice, and he wanted to know if I'd be interested in singing some demos for him. I said sure, half-heartedly, but he's already texted me to set up a time for me to come and work with him on some music. Even though I'm actually kind of excited to work on music, I'm curious about two things. Number one, what, if anything, should I ask for in terms of these demos, in terms of payment and use? Two, I have a notebook of ideas and lyrics for songs that I told him about, and he said he'd like to work with me to develop them into songs. He's a multi-instrumentalist and sings as well. Though I paid him for using his studio and my buddy for his time and playing guitar, going forward, how should I handle this if I come up with some songs with him and record them using his studio? He seems very fair, and I'm definitely not trying to make money off this endeavor, but I do think it would be cool if I could come up with some professional recordings that I could use for an independent release in the future. What are some terms we should agree to other than writing splits? Thanks for your help. What are your suggestions?
Definitely when it comes to any sort of co-writing, like if the guy's helping you write the music and you've got lyric ideas and then you sort of you write it together and then you perform together, I personally don't think he should be charging you studio time for that, particularly if you're both getting, you know, publishing royalties from it. That would be my first thought. As far as you helping him make demos of his material, depending, you know, if it's just a favor, just do it for free, you know. But if he wants to sort of do this as an ongoing thing, I think it's reasonable to expect you'd get paid something. I don't know. It's tough for me to answer that without a few more details.
Yeah, it just depends on what kind of relationship you want to have with this recording engineer. If you want to be collaborators, partners, someone that are working together for some purpose, you may not ask for payment. But if it's really just, hey, I've got some songs that I need some vocals on, will you come sing? And that's all that you do. In that case, it's perfectly acceptable to ask for some payment. Usually it depends on how long the sessions are and how many songs. So you might want to figure up a per song rate. What would you say, Chris, a per song rate should be?
Oh, geez, I don't know. I mean, I've done it for like free for friends, and I've done it for like $250 for, you know, either for a song or for, you know, if a song only takes me a half hour, I'll stick around for longer and play more songs for $250. But I don't know. That's like indie rock Portland world, though. So if he's in LA, you know, you might charge a lot more than that.
Yeah, I was going to say it matters what city you're in as far as the going rate is concerned. You might ask him what he typically pays for those things. As far as collaborating, I would just make sure that you get everything up front and as clear as possible, which should be easier in this scenario, seeing as it's not a friend or someone that's a band member, which that tends to make things a little bit more tricky as far as negotiating people's feelings. But if it's a guy that you're like, yeah, I've got some songs, this is the deal, when we're working on my songs and collaborating, the studio time is, you know, I'm assuming that you're not going to charge me to record these when you're a collaborator in it. We'll split the songs however we decide is fit, if it's 50-50 or whatnot. And when it's distributed, this is how it'll work. So I think as long as you are upfront with that and are clear, then it should be fine. But I do think that singing on his stuff, if that's all you do, should be considered a different thing than something you're actually collaborating together on. And you may work a thing like, yeah, the studio time is going to be free on what we collaborate on if you sing on these things for free. That might be worth the exchange in order to get access to a nice studio that you can use at no charge.
Sounds reasonable.
Thanks for the email, Adam. All right. This is from Ali Ath, who is in Afghanistan, someone who has emailed many times and been a longtime listener to the podcast, all the way from Afghanistan. I'm going to read the email as written. Hey, dear Kevin, great job on the podcast. I'm loving every episode. I listen to each more than once. I was wondering how to claim my Spotify artist profile or whatever it is called. I released 3 albums, but it seems that they connected to another profile on Spotify. Second question. I did collaborate on an album with an American artist. I'm Afghan. And I listened to your podcast with that guy from streamingpromotions.com. Do you think they could do us any good? I mean, our album is bilingual. Is there any playlist specific to our case? Keep up the good work, and thanks for always responding. If you want to respond to the Spotify artist profile portion, I have an answer for the other one.
Yeah, sure. So I think it's kind of a two-part solution. One is just to verify your artist on Spotify, which to do, you just go to artists.spotify.com, and then there's a button. I think it says Get Access or something like that. You press that, and then, you know, they'll have some questions. You verify yourself, and then you can start making customizations to your profile. But it sounds like one of the sticky things about your situation is that other artists' music is being grouped with yours. So to solve that, just talk to your distributor, hopefully CD Baby, and we can communicate with Spotify to get them to kind of sequester them, separate them out to make more of a clear delineation between those artists.
And for the record, this is a common problem on Spotify that they haven't found the perfect solution for yet. Whereas with iTunes and Apple Music, they've been dealing with that issue for a long, long time, and it's pretty quick and easy to fix. So just have some patience on getting that separated. But that is a top priority that is being discussed amongst all distributors and industry people, because it affects everyone, even major label artists that, you know, it's not going to, anyone that has a similar name, it can be a problem. But for your question about playlists, trying to do some playlist promotion for your music, I haven't heard the music, so it's tough for me to know exactly what we're talking about here. But what I would say is the best thing you can do is go and mine Spotify as deep as you can to find playlists that you think your music fits into. And this is where you got to, you know, do the honest self-assessment, what your music fits into and where there might be opportunity. And, you know, then you got to do some more self-assessment on the quality and all that. But anyway, once you've done that, go find all those playlists and look at what the potential market possibility would be. Do you create a kind of music that's pretty niche and there's only a couple bigger playlists? If that's the case, then hiring somebody to pitch to them may not be worth the money. Or you might find that there aren't a lot of bigger Spotify playlists that match, but there's a lot of actual users creating playlists that you yourself might be able to find online by doing a little bit of internet sleuthing and then pitch to them directly. So I would do that work and kind of weigh the options and figure out what's the market opportunity here. Am I going to spend a lot of money to get on a playlist that has 5,000 followers and gets me some spins, but in the end of the day, I spent a ton more money on the promotion service than I'm going to get in return out of value, not just direct value, but promotional value.
So I have a question for you. What do you think that threshold would be that would suddenly make it worth it? Like, whether we're talking about number of playlists or number of subscribers per playlist, like,
I don't know. I think that also is a case by case basis in what you're trying to get. You know, there are some playlists, like if you're in a smaller genre group, but there's a playlist curator that is like a key tastemaker, that might be worth spending the money for, like knowing that this playlist isn't going to generate a million streams for me and I'm not going to make my money back, but getting someone professionally pitching it to this person and getting them to add it might open some doors for some more opportunities in that genre space. So that's something to consider. I think also the amount of playlists that a professional can pitch to that might be worth their time compared to it being worth your time to go online and just do some sleuthing and figure things out. So I don't know. That's a good question. I hope that helps, Ali. Let's move on.
You know, if Charles listens to this podcast sometime. So Charles, if you're listening, let us know what's the threshold we should be looking at in possible playlists and or followers to know whether we should start promoting paid promotion to playlists.
Yeah, and if he's not listening, we will be seeing him next week and I will ask him myself.
Girl, there we go. Solution.
All right. One more email, and it's a long one. This is from Paul Jackson. Dear Kevin and Chris, thank you for the ongoing great content at CD Baby's DIY Musician Podcast. It's invaluable. In between the new episodes, I enjoy going back over previous ones for the occasional refresh. Thank you for them all. Thoroughly informative, entertaining, and inspiring. Particularly highlights are ones featuring Jack Conte and Mary Gaucher. Now, that's cool that Mary's going to be at our conference. My question has in part been touched on in the past, but I'm still in need of some help in finding the right focus, particularly when it comes to artist identity and promotion. I'm a songwriter and musician from the UK and have composed and recorded in different genres in the past and have worked under different monikers and aliases. Electronic pop music under one name, production with some released content on CD Baby and Bandcamp, a series of CD albums on my own label for the educational market using my name as composer Paul A. Jackson, and I've dabbled with instrumental electronica uploading albums under a different name, Duster Jack, as it didn't seem to fit with the other names. So basically, he's struggling with the question of how to manage all these different aliases and different areas that he's making music for. So he goes on, so I've wasted a good amount of time wondering whether to use the production brand, which while I used for such a long time with zero following and momentum, is probably too ambiguous and confusing when it's just me as at a piano. Paul A. Jackson as a name looks like Paula Jackson when it comes to web URLs and handles. So I've decided to just stick with Paul Jackson, which I previously shied away from as it's quite a common name and there's a few out there doing music already. But then again, there are a few bands with the same names out there, so maybe I needn't worry. When it comes to my activity on social media, my own site, emails out, would it be bad practice to shine lights on my other music releases that aren't really fitting with the vocal piano singer-songwriter persona? Do I start with a clean slate and not incorporate my back catalog? On past podcasts, I've heard how the artist story should be an important focus, so I'm trying to find the sweet spot in between somewhere. While I enjoy recording the big electronic pop and dance stuff, I can't really promote it in a live performance capacity without some logistical headaches for me and no doubt the venue, I imagine. I think it restricts and reduces my opportunities to where and when I could perform and present my music as I try to build up a following. It certainly has become confusing for others as well as me. I need to clear the water and have fresh start, refocus, and go with the flow. I would appreciate your help and advice and thoughts. Thanks once again.
We've been getting a version of this question a lot lately.
Yep.
It feels like in the past like 15 episodes, it comes up every second or third.
Yeah. My thought would be similar to what we've said in the past, I believe, is that if he wants to go by Paul Jackson and that be his main artist persona, then, focus on that. Don't hide the other stuff that you're doing, and having those other monikers or names for the other projects is fine. You can bring those along as a part of the story, but I think you just have to make one persona the main persona, where Paul Jackson is you as the artist, and I have these side projects that go under these names. To me, that seems to make the most sense so as to not confuse fans. If you're going to bring all those fans along, which I think you should, because someone who likes your piano music, piano vocal music, might also like some electronic pop. And when they find out you have some, like, oh, cool, I like this stuff as well. So I wouldn't hide it from them, but I would just make it clear that those are, which one is the main thing that you're trying to focus on.
Yeah, the only thing I add to that is that if he doesn't have a huge following under any one particular name or moniker he's used, like, maybe pick a new one for all of it, because if there's already a handful of Paul Jacksons out there, there's not going to stop being Paul Jacksons. There's going to be more and more and more of them. And I don't know. I just hate for people who have really common names to be in that Spotify situation we addressed in the last question, where suddenly your music's lumped in with another 10 different artists. So maybe pick a moniker that is totally unique and then use it for all of your music.
Yeah, it is a challenge with names. It's really an issue, especially in a digital world. The metadata that goes along with music has a lot of issues that they're still trying to work out and get everybody on the same page and have central databases. And, you know, when you are talking physical product, it's like there's either, you know, a Paul Jackson in the record bin or there's not. But in the digital world, it gets a little bit harder when songs are passed around and things are on playlists and you don't have necessarily all the information for an album. And so it can be confusing. And sometimes you have an artist with the same name that actually does very similar music. That happened to me with my band Hello Morning here in Portland. There was a Hello Morning in New Zealand or Australia, and they were called The Hello Morning. And they also did rock music that was close enough that somebody could mistakenly think that that was one of our albums. They would catch on pretty fast, and like, because our lead singer had a pretty distinct voice. But, you know, those mistakes can happen. It wasn't like they were a jazz band where someone like obviously instantly thought, oh, this isn't them. But yeah, so it is a challenge, and it's something that I think artists are going to continue to struggle. So it's important to find that good name that you feel really strongly about, but is also unique enough if it's not your own personal name, or, you know, come up with a stage name for yourself. All right. Well, thank you for all the emails and comments. There were some emails that we didn't have time to get to. If you would like to email us, you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And you can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or leave a comment or question in the show notes at cdbabypodcast.com. Even if I don't read emails on the air, I try to answer all of them as quickly as I can. I think there's a few that I still haven't gotten around to because we have this gigantic event happening next week that we're going to be talking about right now. We moved the DIY Musician Conference 2017 preview to the end of the podcast. So if you're not able to go and don't want to hear about what you're missing out on, or you're just not interested, you could bail out now. But we'll still keep it entertaining and fun. And if you are going to the conference, we're super excited to see you. Please introduce yourself and say hi to Chris and myself and the rest of the CD Baby staff. And we are doing a live DIY Musician podcast taping on Sunday. And it'd be great to get all the podcast listeners there. And it'd just be fun to actually do it live for real. It'd be for real that time. And it's going to be a good topic. So if you live in the Nashville area and you're listening to this, we are going to make some tickets available at the door. A limited number. I'm guessing probably like 50 or so. So if you are in the Nashville area and are thinking, dang, I should have got a ticket, it's been sold out for weeks, well, you can show up at the door and still get a ticket. So before we go through the schedule and kind of point to some of the content that we think is going to be worth your attention and definitely a highlight that you should make a priority, I wanted to cover a few things. So this year, what's new? It's in Nashville. The past 2 years, we've been in Chicago. There's a whole different vibe in Nashville with Nashville as the backdrop. Music is everywhere. And I mean, literally everywhere you go, the fact that it's Music City is in your face. They've really leaned into that narrative for the city. Where we are going to be is going to be at the center of the party as far as where it is in the city. The town is going to be super electric. It's the first week back for all the colleges. Nashville's a huge college town. All the colleges are going to be coming back to school that week. There's free concerts happening out in the city. There's all sorts of stuff happening, and you're right at the heart of all the nightlife and activity. So it's just going to feel like a party. We brought the showcase back. So Saturday night, we're doing a big showcase with some great artists. And do you have that list in front of you, Chris? I don't have the list in front of me. I have not memorized
it. I don't. I know Jeff the Brotherhood is playing, right?
Hillbilly Casino. I'll pull that up in a second. Sunday night, last year we did a closing out party. This time we are doing a closeout party, but there's two stages, and it's going to work similarly to our open mic. There'll be some opportunities to get your name pulled out of a hat if you weren't pre-selected to play, and we'll have limited equipment there for people to play if they do have like a drummer or something, you know, like a bass player that to play along. A lot of the people coming to the conference seem to be solo artists, a lot that can sing, you know, a song with just a guitar, but we'll have some other gear there. So it'll be a big party Sunday night. We've got a legal clinic this time where a law firm that specializes in entertainment law is going to be there providing some 15-minute consultations. And then if you want to sign up for some time and pay them some money and do a deep dive and get some contracts written or whatever, they'll be there. We've got a bigger jam room. And last year, the theme felt like, I don't know, it just felt like there was a lot of heart, a lot of like the heart of the artist kind of feeling. This year, it's going to build off that. And I think that a bigger theme and feeling is that just with Nashville as a backdrop is that music is fun. And, you know, a lot of times we spend talking about how to make money and the hard work of promoting and getting your music out there and building a fan base. But sometimes I think it's good as artists just to acknowledge that playing and writing and recording music is fun. Listening to music is fun. And going, I know hitting the town in Nashville at night, there's a lot of fun out there. I know the locals will turn up their nose towards Broadway and the cover bands and stuff, but it's just fun. Can't we just have a good time and enjoy the fact that music is fun? It doesn't have to be the biggest artistic statement ever. Sometimes we just want to have a good time. And I think the whole vibe will just feel like a lot of fun and just exciting to be a part of music. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Well, and all of this, all of what you just said serves as both an enticement and I think a warning, because the last time you and I were there, I actually had to go home one night at a somewhat reasonable time, like before midnight, because I was worried if I stay out and have another drink and listen to this cover band, I'm going to be out till 5.
Which happened one night. Well, 4.
Right. But in Nashville, what I'm trying to say is that can happen every night. And if you want to get the most out of the conference, you really should be waking up and hitting the sessions that are starting early and actually happening across 3 days this year. So you know, pace yourself, party, but
yeah, it sounds funny to say, but we're actually have had some serious conversations with, you know, our crew that are going. We have a crew of like 30 people going, saying, all right, you've got to really pay attention to pacing yourself. You got to be 100% and ready to do your job and ready to deliver the goods for the people coming to attend, because it is really easy. It is the it's also the bachelorette capital of the United States, bachelorette party capital of the United States. For whatever reason, people have their bachelorette parties in Nashville. I thought we had issues with drinking in Portland because we love our beer. And I'm sure when they figure out a way to make beer come out of water fountains, it will have it in Portland. But when I walked out of my hotel at 11 a.m. and those pedal pubs are going like crazy,
pubs,
full
yeah.
of people already pounding beer, screaming. I'm like, it was just mind blowing. It's easy to get wrapped up in that and just realize, whoa, I came all this way and I spent my time totally wasted in the gutter somewhere. Don't do that. Have a good time. Drink responsibly, pace yourself, and make sure you get a lot out of the conference, because it is quite overwhelming. I should also give our main sponsors a shout out. Music City Songstar. They're doing a song competition. Gig Salad and Berklee Online, all of them came in, stepped up big. They are doing things to make sure that we can keep this conference affordable for artists. And we appreciate their support. YouTube also came in. They are doing a keynote and bringing a team to help people understand Content ID. And then with the pop-up studio, they made a big investment that to bring the pop-up studio to Nashville and let our artists partake in that. So people that were paying attention to our emails got a chance to submit, and we selected like 12 artists to take part in that pop-up studio that they're doing in Nashville. So lots of great stuff. And, you know, we've got other great sponsors there. MerchCat, they've been a good supporter of the conference, and it's always great to see Vanessa and crew there. Sound Exchange, Brooks and Pierce is that law firm I mentioned. Stashimi's been there a few years. Kickstarter, Viral Music Media, Louder, Jamendo Music, Royalty Exchange, ASCAP, Belmont, Merchly, FanMob, My Song List, Bandigo, and more. A lot of these people that have sponsored have really put some money in to help make this thing happen and want to invest in the future success of independent artists. So when you're at the conference, definitely check out what they have to offer. We do screen sponsors to make sure that people are in line with our values and goals for artists and aren't just selling snake oil. So you want to talk about the schedule? Let's talk about the schedule. What's jumping out at you, Chris, that you're really excited to see?
Well, okay, so the first thing I wanted to mention is not a particular seminar. Well, I guess it's a category of seminars. Like, I love going to the kind of workshops that are like real specific goal. Here's how here's a strategy I use to achieve it. So some of the examples of that are happening this year is how I earned $74,000 using Facebook Live. How I earned $25,000 on SoundCloud. There's another one about building your audience on Instagram. Another one about successful Kickstarter campaigns. I love the real focus. You know, we're focusing on one platform, and then it's almost like a case study of how a particular artist used it and achieved some goal. So I'm psyched for those.
Yeah, and one of those you mentioned is a part of a series that we're trying this year called How I Did It. So we're trying a series. We've got three sessions saying How I Did It, and it's an interview. There's two artists typically on it. I think one of them only has one. The YouTube one only has one. But really, a deep dive into a particular success that they had. So they're not just talking in generalities. It's like, I did this one thing, and here's how I did it. So like Chad Lawson's back, and he's going to be talking about how he used SoundCloud as a platform to generate $25,000 in revenue. So that's going to be very interesting. I like those, like you said, as well. One thing that I will note about our conference that we have strived to make very different than other conferences is we engage with our speakers, we vet our speakers, we actually have them submit presentations to us. I know that for my session with Mary and my marketing panel that I'm doing, I've already had conversations by phone, taken lots of notes, have lots of things planned in order to make sure it's very valuable that you're going to learn something. We're not just doing the same old song and dance, you know, industry person that thought about their panel 5 minutes before they walked out there and sat up there and just got on their soapbox. So we are getting as far away from that as we can. And I was doing the production schedule, Chris, and I realized that probably about 80% of our sessions, maybe 80% of our sessions are solo presenters, which to me is a good thing. That means less unprepared panelists, more I'm here to teach you something type sessions.
I have the same feeling in general. I mean, some panels are great, but in general, I always like when it's the single teacher.
One thing that we added last minute, we partnered with Belmont University, where I went to college, which is right at the end of Music Row. They own a very famous studio on Music Row called Ocean Way. It's a lot of big records have been recorded there. And we are going to have one of their professors about recording come to the conference and do a session called When to Use a Private Studio Versus a Commercial Studio. So that will happen during the conference. But then the conference ends at like 1 o'clock on Sunday. But we added this afternoon session where you can go to Ocean Way Studio. If you have a conference ticket, you should have received an email to RSVP to this. It's very limited space. And as far as I know, there's still quite a bit of room left. But you will get to go to Oceanway Studios and watch them demo how to mic, how to record, and record this band. And it's just a really amazing looking studio. This isn't some dark hole of a studio where it's like there's no windows or whatever. This thing looks like a church. You can find pictures of it online. It's pretty amazing. So that is going to be a really cool session that we added. And one thing that we did, like I mentioned, we tried to get more performance opportunities. So, you know, we selected the band that's going to be in this recording session just from, you know, people that bought tickets to the conference. Same with a lot of the YouTube pop-ups folks. So, yeah, that's going to be something that I think is going to be really cool to see how that plays out. And if it, hopefully it works well, you know, if it works well, we'll probably try and bring it back next year. That's something new we're doing.
Yeah, speaking of things we bring back year after year, well, not things, but people, Tom Jackson is going to be back, and he, in the past 2 years, has done a full band makeover on stage. You know, they run down a song, then he tears it apart and builds it back, and then by the time this workshop is over, you're blown away by how much more the band is communicating and entertaining. This year, the thing I'm most excited for about Tom is when he's going to do a... I believe it's a singer-songwriter makeover, or at least a solo performer makeover, right? Because I think a lot of times he gets that, well, oh yeah, well sure, that's easy to do when you're working with five people and you can kind of get people to run around, but what if it's just me and my guitar? And he's going to prove to you that his methods apply when you're just standing in front of a mic by yourself.
Yeah, that session is called Creating a Great Show Without a Band. And it's been a long time since I've seen him do this version. In fact, it was when I was in Small Town Poets. We went to a retreat where he was a speaker, and this was the session he did. It's pretty amazing. It's pretty amazing what a difference it makes, even for a solo artist. Even if you're just sitting on a stool with an acoustic guitar, there's so many little nuanced things that when you see a performer do it, and then the adjustments he makes, it's fascinating. So I think that'll be a big hit. That's going to be in the main ballroom, and I think that one's going to be packed. Let's see, what else?
I mean, I've got a few if you want me to.
Yeah, go on.
I can run down my list. Yeah. So you mentioned your interview with Mary Gaucher, which I'm excited about for a couple reasons. One, she's one of my absolute favorite songwriters. She's brilliant. And so if she talks anything about the craft of songwriting, it's going to be fascinating. But I think the other thing I'm excited for is that Mary is like one of those very authentic people. And I think what's always most important to her is that authenticity and not just chasing like marketing goals or just, not just being famous. Like that's not the goal. The goal is to be true to yourself and to express something that connects with people. And I feel like amidst all of these other actionable, how do you build your Instagram thing, and which are all great. I'm excited for that too, but she'll be a good antidote to, the specificity of some of that other stuff. I feel like it'll be a great artistic pep talk, which we all need.
Yeah, in my prep call with her last week, we could have talked for hours and it was amazing and she's great. And I was thinking today of, like, she might, you know, be the embodiment of the authentic artist that she's had success in all different places, like major label success, a songwriter success, failures, struggles, but yet her focus is about her and doing her thing the way she wants to, in an authentic way, and being true to herself. And I think it'll be very inspiring. I even teared up a little bit when I was talking to her on the phone. So it'll be interesting.
Now you need to duplicate the moment now in front of 1,000 people.
Well, I think I will, because I think all I had to do is get her talking on a certain subject. It pertains to what she's been doing lately. So I think it will be a very useful, interesting and moving discussion as well. Bob Boylan's back in force this time. He's doing two things.
I know. His song pitch, he's doing the song pitch session, right?
Correct.
As well as a keynote. That song pitch thing is going to be cool because people submit their songs and then a panel of tastemakers and experts and industry people basically give you their immediate feedback. And I saw one of these at Folk Alliance maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And it's pretty awesome. Like, you know, you have to have thick skin, I think, but should be illuminating as to what these people are listening for and to when they hear a song, and whether, you know, making a judgment about whether they like it, and then also making a judgment about whether it fits their need that they have.
I have to be honest. I get really uncomfortable in those types of sessions.
Well, I would too if I was submitting it, but it's fun to watch when you're not.
All I think about is like, please don't make this song suck. Please, please. So that this person doesn't get humiliated in front of this whole group. And it's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because it's a panel of folks that have different needs in the industry. So it's someone like Bob Boylan that's more editorial. Then there's a music supervisor, which is going to be more usage for film and TV. And I think there is somebody from ASCAP, I believe, that's on that session that it's going to be... I could be wrong. There's two sessions that are geared more towards the song, and I don't have the speakers in front of me, but so there'll be people from different aspects of the industry that have different ways they interact with the song, whether it's helping songwriters just write better songs, editorials, film and TV, or production wise. So the feedback is interesting, and it could be like a song could be totally useless to one person, but very valuable to somebody else, or you know, they might get some rough feedback that the song's just not there. You took too long to get to the hook or whatever. It's interesting. I saw one of these at South by Southwest, and the whole time I was just like, oh my gosh, they're not even playing my music, and I feel so so nervous for these people.
Well, the most depressing thing about it that I always just can't stop focusing on is it's too late. You already spent the money, recorded. I mean, often, sometimes it's demos that people are presenting, but I think a lot of times in these types of panels, it's the finished product, and then you have this person saying, well, the drums sound like crap, and the intro is like 30 seconds too long, and it's like, well, what am I going to do about it?
Well, at least you know for next time.
Yeah.
Because at least somebody told you before you spent the money on the next album, and or at least hired maybe some production help to dial things in a little bit better. Last year, I don't remember us having much to do with like social media, but we've got Rick Barker is doing the one about Facebook Live that I know will be interesting. And then I've got somebody I found last minute. We had an opening in the schedule and I found last minute named Ryan Carter. He has a marketing agency in Nashville, but he had spoke at the NAMM show about using Instagram, and he's worked with some musicians and has some case studies and how to build an audience with Instagram. So I think there's some really focused topics that I think are going to be very helpful and engaging and useful for artists. And then you are doing a session that I think is going to be very well received called Preparing Your Music for a Successful Release, which we did a version of it at the ASCAP Expo, and I could not believe the level of engagement. People had so many questions and were just like hanging on every word, and I was worried it might be a dry topic, but it's, I think, very helpful in lifting the veil on some of the mysteries around the distribution process. And that may seem like, well, you just upload your files and away they go. But there's actually a lot of things that you can take advantage of or need to know about in order to do it the most effective way. And that session is going to talk a lot about that.
Yeah, it's kind of like there's no real right or wrong way to distribute your music. If you want to like record a single and put it out the next day, like that's fine. But you have to know that with that comes a lot of trade-offs, and you know, you sort of adjust your goals accordingly. But you know, so sort of setting what you want to get out of this release, and then having the proper planning, and also knowing all the tools that are available to you in that lead-up to make it the release that you want it to be, instead of rushing through things.
And then Charles Alexander is going to be back talking about getting your music on Spotify playlist. And then you're also doing a little breakout session about Spotify.
Twice. I'm doing it twice. So, you know, if you miss one,
you're going to be mobbed for that. It's going to be jam packed. You know, and we mentioned Bob Boylan is going to be back twice, but I didn't mention the other thing he's doing. He's doing the Your Song Changed My Life taping at the conference with Pokey Lafarge. Anything Bob is always well done. He's such a great interviewer, and he's such a big music fan that I don't think I've met anyone that's a bigger music fan than Bob.
Yeah, I am constantly amazed at people that retain their enthusiasm for music when they listen to it nonstop, because I would have the opposite response to. But one thing I am looking forward to always is the open mic on that first night, because I feel like it's such a cool kind of community icebreaker. It's casual, you know, it's like it's, you're not all sitting in chairs listening to someone talk, so you can interact more. And then you get to hear what some of the people at the conference, what kind of music they make, which is cool. I always find that to be one of the most fun moments.
Several things about that. Some information. If you are going to the conference, you should pay attention to this. One, we got a call from BB Kings because they said so many artists or attendees were calling them trying to reserve a table. And so they asked us if we wanted to move up from the basement venue, which held about 250 people, to the main BB King stage upstairs, the big room. And we said yes. So we are moving it. It's on the big stage at BB King's. It's going to look great. However, that did come with some financial commitments from us. So we encourage you to eat and drink a lot. But it's
make that your party.
It's going to be great because you know, we thought with all the tickets we sold that it would be, that was my one concern, that people would have a hard time getting into the open mic and that venue size, because we had to rent a venue a year ago. You can't rent a venue on a Friday night 2 weeks out. So we've had that set up for a long time. And then when we sold so many tickets, I thought, oh man, a lot of people aren't going to get into the open mic. They're going to be upset. So we took the risk moving it up to the big stage. It's going to look great. I've been in that room before. And so, yeah, just encourage you to go there and make a night of it. And the other thing I heard through an unverified source, I know who the source was, but I haven't verified if this source is a legitimate source or not. But they were told that a talent scout for a new reality TV show on Fox centered around music that's launching this year is going to be there scouting out for talent. Take that with a grain of salt, but we are in Nashville, so it wouldn't surprise me if there are more industry people at this thing and the Sunday night party and the showcase than would have been in Chicago, and people that are always on the lookout for new music. So it could be a really cool opportunity for artists to not only play for their peers, but there'll be some industry people in the room that might have some interest in what you're doing.
Well, and, you know, I don't know what Bob's schedule is, Bob Boylan, but last year he attended the open mic very enthusiastically, you know, looking to hear as much music as he could. And, you know, so someone like that will be there with their ears open. Yeah.
So it's going to be a great event. Looking forward to it. And that's just a quick preview of some of the things that have caught our eye and some of the things we're excited about. I think the whole thing's going to be amazing. I'm really excited. I've gotten over the stress of having to pull this all together, and I'm starting to actually go, it is what it is. I can do no more. I can just enjoy it now. But I will be there. Chris will be there. Definitely introduce yourself. Say hi. If we look distracted or stressed out, that's because we might have some duty that we're trying to take care of for the conference or on our way to a session. I'm doing 3 different sessions. Chris, you are doing how many? 3? 4?
I'm doing 4 if you count the one I'm doing
so
twice.
Chris is doing 4, and we hope you'll join us for the live taping of the DIY Musician podcast, but it's just going to be a great event. And looking forward to seeing everybody in Nashville next week. By the time you hear this, it might be the week of the conference, and so it's going to be a good time.
Which means you have a matter of days to get in shape to show off your body at the
yeah, that's
pool.
One big difference. It's at a hotel that was built like 3 years ago as opposed to one that was built 120 years ago. And that's not an exaggeration. Nice rooftop pool, nice amenities, lots of restaurants in the building, even a taco stand that serves amazing tacos. How can you go wrong? Coffee shop, all right in the hotel of the conference. We'll say I'm on a cleanse right now, Chris. I'm cleansing my body, getting ready for the conference. trying to lose a couple extra pounds
I'm
so
just
I can,
gonna make
can enjoy the rooftop pool with confidence.
I'm just making the disclaimer that I have not prepared. So I will be there in all of my, you know, aging
right.
glory.
Well, with all that, that'll bring us to the end of the show. Again, if you want to email or call or leave a message, 360-524-2209, podcast at cdbabypodcast.com, or look on the show, go to the podcast website, cdbabypodcast.com, and just leave a comment on the show notes. And with that, we will be ending the podcast and heading to Nashville. So we'll see you there.
See you soon.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.